Hi, I'm Lena.
And I'm Amon.
And this is Grounded Geeks,
where we make the geek world relevant.
Yes. This week, what we are making relevant, do we have to make it relevant? Anyway, we're talking about Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, Obi-Wan!
Obi-Wan Kenobi. So this is a series on Disney Plus. Yeah, Lucasfilm is just
expanding
the Star Wars universe as much as possible. And by expanding, I mean like not actually expanding. It's more like just expanding the same story.
They're like diving deeper, I would call it.
Yeah, diving deeper. That's true.
Yeah, they're diving deeper. Though, if you don't know who Obi-Wan Kenobi is, like, what are you doing with your life?
Right. Okay. Anyway, to set the scene, this TV series takes place 10 years after episode 3, the movie, which is, what is the name of title of episode 3? I literally never remember the titles of the movie. So.
Revenge of the Sith.
Right. Okay, great. So it takes place 10 years after that. Obi-Wan Kenobi is super sad and alone.
He's super sad. And just super alone.
And all he does is in his free time is watch 10-year-old Luke from afar with binoculars.
Pseudo creepy. Yeah. Not gonna lie.
What's his like job that he does? His like day job?
Oh, he got like a job.
Like slicing meat or something?
Basically, there's a crate dragon in the middle of the desert and it's being its meat is basically being harvested and Obi-Wan is working minimum wage at this meat harvesting facility, basically. The crate dragon, Lena, if you don't remember, was featured very prominently in The Mandalorian.
Oh,
Yeah.
Remember also, that reminded me so much of Dune. Like, what came first, Dune or Star Wars?
Definitely Dune. Dune is most definitely listed as an influence on Star Wars. You know, the whole description of Arrakis, even in Star Wars, the drug spice.
Yeah.
Where do you think that comes from?
I just feel like it's a total ripoff.
It is. I mean, in so many ways.
I'm like, that's not inspiration. You're just ripping off Dune. Like, it's kind of dumb. So.
Deserts. I mean, how many more varieties of desert can you come up with?
Yeah, but still, come on. I don't know. Make it a little less obvious.
Yeah. Like, I'm pretty sure I've said this before, but, you know, the key to originality is saying something that you've heard before, but not remembering where you said it. Where you heard it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Ironically, I don't remember who said that.
Wow. Well, very on brand for this conversation. Anyway, so yeah, what were your thoughts on the show?
I really loved it. I thought it was an excellent deep dive into... So Star Wars has always been this like big, you know, heroic, epic, space operatic show with the movies and everything. And I liked that this series, instead of leaning into the space opera aspect of it, we got to dive into what's happening in the mind of one of the very prominent characters. In this case, Obi-Wan Kenobi. And I loved that. I loved that exploration. It's one of the reasons why I've always really enjoyed all of the animated stuff in Star Wars as well, because those shows really stretch out within canon, dive into the characters, into the psychology of different characters, what they're thinking, what's going on in their heads. But they've always stayed away from the major characters of the movies because, you know, I guess just you have a kid's TV shows, don't fuck with the movies. I don't know what orders are from high above, but this was a chance to delve into the psychology of what's happening in the main characters' minds from the movies. And I love that. I thought it was great.
Yeah. I also really enjoyed it. I loved that it was like 10 years after episode 3. Mm-hmm. Like Luke and Leia are like 10 years old. We get to see a lot of Leia as a little 10-year-old. That actress was really good. I thought she was great. And
I thought so too. Was there a lot of hate against her casting?
No, I don't know. I don't think so.
Like, I feel like there was some. I heard
against
about
Leia?
Some. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I only heard about the, you know, stupid racist complaints about
Moses Ingram's casting.
Yeah. Yeah. For Inspector Reva, which is like, dude, get over it. Okay. Which,
like, I'm sorry. I feel like this is a problem that Star Wars fans have. Like, it's a problem in the fandom, I think.
I just, like, I don't understand. Like, we, as people of color, we have been enjoying and celebrating stories about white people for decades, okay? And you can't handle any stories about anyone who's not white? Get over yourself.
Also, like, what is your problem? Like, not you, but the general fandom. Like, Lando's black. Like, there are obviously black people in space. Like, calm the fuck down.
Yeah, but it's just, I mean, that's the thing. Like, these people, they're like happy with one token, right?
Yes.
And then they're like, yeah, that's more than enough. But like anything beyond that, it just I don't know, like their brain just starts malfunctioning or something. It's so stupid. But anyway,
I thought she was great.
Yeah, she was fantastic. I really enjoyed her character. I loved seeing her like ups and downs kind of. Like I think,
right.
I don't know if they're going to do. Okay, wait, before I go into that, just to finish up my thoughts on this season, it was really good. Really enjoyed all the like various relationships that they were showing between like Obi-Wan Kenobi and little Leia. Mm-hmm. And then also like revisiting that clashing between him and Darth Vader. And okay, so I know this doesn't make sense because we obviously know he's Darth Vader now and like super evil and all this stuff. But I kind of kept hoping that I was like, oh, I wonder if there's going to be an instance or a scene during the season at some point mm-hmm. where Darth Vader does something that shows maybe he's got like a tiny bit of a heart left or something before it goes completely mm-hmm. evil. I thought they were maybe going to show that. That would be right. interesting. And mm-hmm. then, you know, obviously we see him become just more Darth Vader-y. So, I mean, so obviously I knew there was no chance of him ever becoming good because, hello, right. like there's episodes right. 4, 5, and 6 to prove us wrong. But so, yeah, I don't know. I think I just kept, I wanted like a little bit more from that relationship. And also, while the choreography of their fight scenes were super fun to watch, mm-hmm. in the back of my mind, I was also like, well, I know neither of them die. You know, like it's just like literally it was just so I don't know. It yeah. was like I was like battling with these feelings in my head.
I can see that. And it's something that has been an issue, I think, with the prequel trilogies, with all of the Star Wars shows, a lot of the Star Wars shows that take place in between the movies.
Yeah.
All right. Where in a sense, you know the ending already. You know how it's going to end. Right. But it's not about that. It's about the journey, you know? In Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, the whole fucking place starts off with, this is a story about the death of two lovers.
Yeah.
That's the narration. That's the introduction, you know? So it's not about, we know they're going to die. It's about how they're going to die in Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
And I guess in the Odyssey, you don't really know if Odysseus is going to survive.
Well,
yeah, I guess you don't.
Do you know? Don't you know? Because how else does the Odyssey exist?
No, I mean, if you read the Iliad, I mean, everybody dies.
Right.
Odysseus is like the only person who doesn't die. I think technically it falls under Greek comedy because he didn't die.
But how was this, like, how would the story have been relayed if he died, you know? So,
well, it's not meant to be as a true story. It's just, it's a myth, you know?
Right.
It is the story of Odysseus. The stories maybe pass on from other people who heard it, you know?
No.
Okay. Kind of like how in Deuteronomy, you know, supposedly Moses wrote that book of the Bible, but he dies at the end of it. So how did he write his own death?
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, then. Well, anyway, yeah, I mean, so that was just me being like snarky and being like, well, we know they both live.
So, point taken, counterpoint. All right. Counterpoint, I would say, is that in Obi-Wan, you're following two different arcs. Mm-hmm. All right. You are following you're not following the full character arc of Obi-Wan Kenobi or Darth Vader. You are following part of their journey. In part of Obi-Wan's journey and part of Darth Vader's journey, all right?
Right.
In Obi-Wan's journey, we are seeing somebody who has already been a hero and has fallen into the depths of loss and depression, all right? And this is the journey of him clawing his way out of that, all right? Not to become the full hero again, but to then get back onto the path of being a hero. All right. Mm-hmm. With Darth Vader, we've already seen not the hero's journey, but the villain's journey. All right. Of Anakin Skywalker becoming a hero and turning and then becoming a villain by the end of Revenge of the Sith.
Mm-hmm.
And what we are seeing here is the completion of that journey. Mm-hmm. All right. We've already seen his heroic moments. We've already seen his motivators that are coming from a more virtuous place, him wanting to save his wife,
right?
All right, from dying, all right? And how that led him to the path of villainy. This arc is about him sealing in his, completing his journey into villainy. Mm-hmm. All right. We end the whole season, spoilers, with Darth Vader on Mustafar talking to the Emperor. Mm-hmm. All right. And the Emperor is saying, I think you've run your journey of trying to find closure as far as it's going to go. It's time for you to fully commit to
evilness.
To the dark side. You know, to being my apprentice. I've given you enough of a leash to you know, close out the rest of your affairs from your old life.
Yeah.
Okay. You've done that now, you know?
Yeah.
Time to stop this bullshit. Mm-hmm. All right. And so this story arc is of Darth Vader hunting Obi-Wan Kenobi. All right. In a way, not for the sake of hunting Obi-Wan Kenobi, but to find closure on his old life as a Jedi, all right?
Like,
that's why he wants to kill Obi-Wan.
Right, because it's a reminder of who he used to be, which was a hero, a good person, someone who fought for the good side of things. And it's like, he just wants to snuff that out now.
That, and also him overcoming the vestiges of his past life, where he was an apprentice to somebody else. Now he's an apprentice to a new master, all right? And he wants to close out this old chapter where he can say, I've surpassed you and I've moved on.
Yeah.
You know, as long as Obi-Wan is still alive, there's still that guy who could beat him, which we saw in the flashback training scene. You know, between Anakin and Obi-Wan, where Anakin had him at lightsaber's tip, you know, and Obi-Wan had lost his lightsaber and was still able to overcome Anakin to finally win the duel. You know, this is what Anakin is trying to overcome. In terms of what you're talking about, what you were wanting to see in this show about some vestiges of Darth Vader's goodness still being in there. We actually get to see, as audience members, we actually got to see those moments in Star Wars Rebels, actually. And at the end of Star Wars Clone Wars. These are two animated shows that were helmed by Dave Filoni. You know, I would say spiritual successor to George Lucas in when it comes to Star Wars.
Sure. Yes.
So we actually got to see moments of that where Anakin Skywalker is looking for the death of his old Padawan, Ahsoka Tano.
Oh.
You know? And you kind of see that moment in Anakin as Darth Vader, sort of almost sad. You get the sense that he's sad that Ahsoka died, as far as he knew, you know? So wait, we actually get Ahsoka to see Tano someone.
Was like his student?
Yes.
I had no idea. Sorry.
Yes.
Cool. And he thinks she dies.
Yes.
At some point.
And at the end of Star Wars Clone Wars.
Wait, when was she his student?
In between episodes 2 and 3.
Oh, so she's older than the kids he then just murders.
Yes.
Oh, that's so fucked up. How, like, I mean, it's crazy. How do you just, like, go from that to just murdering children? I don't know. Also, like, that scene also was affecting me a lot because of the real life shooting right. that happened in Uvalde, mm-hmm. Texas. And
absolutely.
Also, like, I mean, the fact that this show, oh, same with Netflix's Stranger Things, they had to put warnings in front
yes.
of these episodes saying, like, this is very triggering for, like, real world right. events that have happened and,
right.
and stuff. And it's just, I don't know, it's just, it's
I think
really
it's
fucked
sad
up.
That they have to put those
yeah.
warnings up.
Because, like, these acts are so horrific, they're so atrocious that, you know, they should only be in fantasy made-up worlds. It shouldn't be happening in the
right.
real world.
I think the slight comfort, in a sense, I don't know if that's even the right word here, is that when they show these sorts of events on TV shows, the writers, the artists behind, these storytellers, all right, they're displaying these events because they're horrific. They're meant to be horrific, yeah. you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that it's completely insane that it's taken so long, you know, for Congress to pass any sort of gun control measures,
well,
you know?
Yeah. Well, now it doesn't even matter thanks to the Supreme Court expanding gun rights. Are you kidding?
Like, it's completely insane. I'm gonna call it right here. All right. I think we need a movement to repeal the Second Amendment.
Okay? Yeah, I think yes, we need yes. a movement to end lifelong, like, appointees of the Supreme Court.
You don't need a movement for that. You literally just need an act of Congress for that.
Oh, well, there we go.
Yeah, I know we're going to totally sidetrack right here, but the best solution that I've thought of is that the Supreme Court have a rotating bench. I think it should
yeah.
be 3 justices get appointed every 4 years for 12-year terms.
But all then right? would that turn into some – well, no, I guess it wouldn't because you're being appointed, right? So
yes.
I was thinking, like, would it turn into these stupid presidential elections where basically you're president for 2 years and then you immediately start campaigning again? You know,
no, because it would be an appointment thing. You can't, yeah. it's not elected. It wouldn't be elected by the people. But I think that having yeah. every 4 years, 3 justices rotate out of the Supreme yeah. Court, all right, still appointed by the president, I think would be a good move.
Yeah.
Because in that sense, the Supreme Court would then be a little bit more reflective of mm-hmm. the American people. And you wouldn't have this sort of dug in-ness of philosophical thinking where the sense of where the country is at was decided 30 years ago because yeah. the president at that time appointed somebody who's still on the bench.
Right.
You know,
I mean, it's
completely
just
insane.
I mean, right now we have a Supreme Court that is a extremist Christian nationalist court.
Yes.
You know, and yes. like, for example, yeah, we are going off on this. I don't even care because it's related to the empire and the empire's extremist and fascist and whatever. So here we are. Okay. But like, this is, yeah, the actual Supreme Court that we have in this country. And they have this extremist Christian agenda. And it is an infringement entirely on my freedom of religion. I mean, overturning Roe v. Wade by saying things that, like, by banning abortions in pretty much, like,
yeah.
half the country. Like, when, by the way, abortions can be used for medical reasons to save
yes.
the mother's life. And in the Quran, in Islam, it actually says that if you have to choose between saving the baby or the mother, you save the mother's life.
Yes.
That is what it says in my religion. So why are these people forcing their extremist Christian agenda onto me and my life?
I actually don't think people even understand the full possible implications of Roe v. Wade. The right to abortion, all right, allows for doctors, and I mean, forget about voluntary abortions where somebody, as a matter of choosing their family mm-hmm. and the future of their family, gets an abortion. To set that issue even aside, all right, I think that this will end up being a case where doctors will be hamstrung in treating miscarriages.
Yeah.
They will be hamstrung in terms of forcing women to give birth to stillborn children. All right.
Yeah.
I think that this is also going to get into the whole notion of contraception.
Yeah.
The use of Plan B pills, all right, is likely to go through another fight. I think that this will also call into threat the use purely of IUDs. You know? Another form of birth control. I think that moving forward, I could see this also eventually restricting my right to get a vasectomy.
Yeah. I mean, like,
in
this
the future,
is,
you know, I mean, yeah. I think that people don't even understand the full implications of what this ruling is about to unleash.
Yeah. I mean, the race traitor / Uncle Tom, Clarence Thomas, literally wrote in his opinion that we should really target protection for contraception next and same-sex marriage and marriage equality next. Like, Clarence, he just doesn't want to stop there.
Clarence Thomas is an A-grade piece of shit.
Yep.
All right. I have no respect for him as a person, and I have no respect for him as a legal scholar either.
And imagine if this country had just listened to Anita Hill.
Yep.
We would not be here.
Yep.
Or at least we wouldn't have that moron on the bench.
I mean, forget about moron. I mean, he completely lacks ethics. His wife has been fully involved in trying to overturn the election of Joe Biden based on nothing, without no facts or anything. I think it's completely insane.
There's evidence that his wife is connected to the January 6th insurrection, and yet this man gets to sit on the Supreme Court and make decisions for all of Americans?
No. Absolutely.
Like, I mean,
it's completely crazy. Okay.
back to Star Wars?
Back to Star Wars, all right? Because the other thing that I wanted to get into, actually, was the whole notion of, and this is going to tie in, I think, can tie in very well, the whole notion of balance in the Force and not just good and evil.
Right.
All right?
Okay.
The other thing about the story, going back to Obi-Wan, the thing that I like about this journey, all right, and the dual arcs, not just dual arcs, I guess. What's the word for three arcs going at the same time?
I have no idea.
Because you've got arc. Obi-Wan.
Huh? Triple arc? I don't know.
This whole triple arc of Obi-Wan, Darth Vader, and third Sis Inquisitor Reva. Mm-hmm. All right. You have constantly the push and pull, all right, of balance in the Force. Mm-hmm. All right. And one's connection to the Force that is the determining factor of who is the victor and the loser in any fight.
Uh-huh.
All right. I liked how that played out. All right. Mm-hmm. I think that you don't have good without evil. You don't have order without chaos. I think everything in the universe has to have the push and the pull, the balance to make it all work. Mm-hmm. All right. If you look at Third Sister Reva's arc, all right, she started off as a Jedi Padawan, all right, whose friends were all killed by Darth Vader, all right, and that created an opposite reaction in her, where she then sought out revenge, okay, and even though she started off as good, i.e., a Jedi. All right. She then fully threw herself into the dark side of the Force to seek out her revenge against Darth Vader.
Right.
All right. However, I think that her ultimate loss was in throwing herself so fully into the dark side without it actually being true to who she is.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't hold her center. So when she finally fought Darth Vader,
all right,
she lost brutally, horrifically. Like, what lost, so she got her ass raffle stomped.
Right.
All right. Like, Vader didn't even pull out his lightsaber. He just kicked her ass.
No, he stabbed her with a lightsaber. Was that not?
I think he stabbed her with her own lightsaber.
Dang.
All right. Yep. Like,
how did she survive that? Okay, sorry. Small tangent. I just find it, Star Wars is great. I love the stories. I love the characters. But it is so stupid how every stormtrooper, despite whatever armor they're wearing, which must be made of air,
dies immediately.
And yet she is stabbed straight through the stomach or chest or whatever with a lightsaber and she survives?
Well, as they made clear, you know, in our previous episode of Our Flag Means Death, all your important parts are on the right side. So as long as you get stabbed on the left, you'll be fine.
Except through the heart on your left side. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, all the important bits are on the right. All right. You're like, if you're going to get stabbed in the gut, you just got to shift to get stabbed on your left.
Okay.
Then. All right. That's the explanation I'm going with.
Okay, fine. Whatever. All right.
But Third Sister Reva's arc doesn't end with her getting raffle stomped by Darth Vader. It ends with her chasing after Luke and not being able to bring herself to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it would be the poetic revenge where Darth Vader killed her Jedi family, right? And she kills his son.
Which he does not at this point know that he even exists, right?
He does not know that he even exists, correct. Mm-hmm. He has no idea that Luke and Leia are his children or that he even has children, all right?
Because he just thinks Padme died.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. In childbirth and that the children did not survive. Mm-hmm. He has no evidence to think that there were children born, just that Padme died. Okay. Right. So Third Sister Reva's arc ends with her finding her way back to her true self, to finding her way back to her center, all right? And I think that is what her story arc is really all about.
Yeah.
Okay? Finding your way back to the balance of who you are and where you stand in the Force.
Right.
All right? Darth Vader and Obi-Wan are on opposite ends of the Force, all right? And their struggle, their victories and their losses in their duels has to do with their strength and their connection to the Force.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, they both still need to exist. They still both need to be alive at the end of this show,
right?
All right, for the balance in the Force to hold, okay? Yeah. You still need Obi-Wan around to teach Luke and introduce Luke to the ways of the Force to bring to make sure the Force remains in balance.
Right.
All right. And I think that the whole notion of Anakin Skywalker being quote unquote the chosen one from the prequel from episodes 1, 2, and 3. Mm-hmm. All right. And him being the one to bring balance to the Force. I think he did exactly that with his turn to the dark side. The Jedi had basically eradicated the Sith to their knowledge and basically had full control of the galaxy. That is not actually the Force being in balance. I think that Darth Vader destroying the Jedi Order, all right, helped bring balance to the Force. It didn't bring the Force to good, quote unquote, to the light. It shifted it back to the dark. It tipped the scales back into more towards the middle. All right. Now, you only have two Siths, all right? Darth Sidious, Emperor Palpatine, and Darth Vader. All right. And you only have a couple of Jedi left between Yoda and Obi-Wan. There's a few other bit players out there, all right? But that is the major balance that is happening in the Force. You don't have good without evil. You don't have order without chaos. So I think Darth Vader did exactly that. However, the duels between Darth Vader and Obi-Wan, I think, are telling of how lightsaber duels are actually won, which is through one's connection to the Force.
Uh-huh.
And the back and forth between in their duels also ends up resulting in Obi-Wan and Darth Vader being relatively equally matched. Obi-Wan eventually overcame Darth Vader, but he didn't kill him. All right. They basically were evenly matched. And so I think that that is where the balance comes in yeah. the Force.
So, I mean, this is very much just reminding me of what happened this past week in America, which is like,
I told you we'd come back to this.
Yeah. But like, what the fuck? Why can't we just live in a good world? Why does it need to be like, quote unquote, in bad? Like, that's not balance. It's just shifting from good to bad to good to bad to good to bad. I don't see balance.
Think of it as a seesaw.
But that's garbage.
When one end tips up, the other end tips. The other end has to counterbalance. All right.
I mean, I just feel like this is all going back to the real world. I just feel like this is all like everything. Every bad thing we've seen since like 2016 has just been one humongous backlash to having a black president of the United States.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. However, I would say that the analogy that I'm using of the seesaw, mm-hmm. that assumes that the fulcrum has to remain fixed. All right.
Yeah.
And I think that that is not the case. I think we are
in the
seeing,
real world or in Star Wars. Okay.
I would say in both.
Okay.
All right. That the back and forth seesaw between what's happening in this country, what happened in the world of Star Wars. All right. The seesaw happens and the fulcrum shifts as the seesaws.
Right.
All right. And I think that we are currently in this cycle. All right, where a lot of progress, and I'm going to call it progress. I don't care what anybody else's point of view is. Progress on women's rights, women's reproductive rights, as well as racial equality and justice in this country. All right, mm-hmm. We had a swing upwards in that. Also, that resulted, I think, in a big way in the election of Barack Obama mm-hmm. in 2008. All right.
Yes.
2004.
No,
eight.
It feels like a lifetime ago.
Yeah. And now we're seeing a backlash to that, I think, and a continuing backlash that happened at the beginning of 2016.
Yeah.
All right. And is continuing to this day. And I at least still have faith that the seesaw is going to swing back the other way, because there's another aspect to the seesaw, I think. All right. I would say in the last half century, in the last 100 years or so, Congress has been voluntarily relinquishing its own authority in the affairs of this country. All right. Uh-huh. Congress has been relinquishing more and more of its power to the president and has been hiding behind the rulings of the Supreme Court as a way to not actually do anything, because somebody figured out at some point, Mitch McConnell, mm-hmm. and what's that other asshole's name?
There's so many.
Newt Gingrich. They realized, I think, that it is electorally more advantageous, all right, to just do nothing and blame the other side, and you're more likely to get reelected. There are a lot of bills that go through Congress knowing that it's not going to get passed, but they get introduced merely as a statement. And I think that with this ruling, all right, there's going to be a greater drive to get Congress to reclaim more of the actual powers that it has. And then I think eventually, maybe in the next 10, 15 years or so, I think Congress should start to, you know, stiffen its spine and take actual actions. And I think that the first step to doing that is getting rid of the Senate filibuster. You know, so much bullshit.
Right.
So many people hide their bullshit behind the filibuster. You know, I think that members of Congress and members of the Senate should run on what they've actually done.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
And the best way to see what is it that they're actually doing is to get rid of the filibuster.
Yep.
And I think that there is a seesawing, not just of what's happening in terms of rights, in terms of ethics, in terms of justice, whether it be racial justice, equality, women's rights, reproductive health, what have you. It's not just in that. There's also a seesawing happening between the different centers of power in the United States. And
yeah.
I think that we are watching a very slow moving seesaw happening.
Well, we're not just watching. A lot of people are also suffering as a result of all these
suffering actions. and living through. Yes.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, and the thing is, again, similar to the world of Star Wars, I feel like the basic average person doesn't even have time to worry about rights being taken away, which is a very abstract kind of thing to think about when food prices are going up and rent is going up, but wages are not. And you're trying to just figure out how to pay rent in the next week or month and how to get food for your family. Yeah. Like it's just, so
I mean, there is that saying, it's the economy, stupid. All right. But having a child is super fucking expensive as well.
Yeah. All so, right? yeah. And that's the thing. And it's like, they're just gonna, I mean, it's all connected. And anyway, so I also wanted to talk about how last thing to bring up about the show is, so it seemed to me that they left it fairly open-ended to maybe make a second season.
Yeah.
And but if they do,
what would that second season be?
It can't just be about Obi-Wan and Darth Vader again, because it's the hell, like, okay, we know what happens, you know. So but I think if they do a second season, it should be all about Inspector Reva's character.
Yeah.
And that would be interesting and actually expanding the Star Wars universe. And speaking of expanding, have you heard that there's going to be apparently another Star Wars movie, but this time directed by Taika Waititi? And I will share this article in the show notes, but he basically said, so I mean, this is just the headline of an article I read, but it says Taika Waititi's Star Wars movie will reject pre-existing characters and origins and, quote, expand the world. So, which I love. I'm all about it. And it says it's going to be the franchise's first movie since the Skywalker saga, blah, blah, blah. And Taika Waititi said he's not interested in making a movie with pre-existing characters and story threads.
Yay.
Or telling origin stories like Solo. He wants to create some new characters and expand the world of Star Wars, which I love. Like, I mean, it is a whole freaking universe, right? So, let the Skywalkers go.
Yeah. I think that what makes Star Wars, Star Trek, you know, these kinds of worlds so intriguing and fascinating is because they are full and complete worlds with lots of stories to tell. The world of Star Wars that we are familiar with only gave us one tiny slice.
Yeah.
All right. Of what's happening in this universe.
Yeah.
All right. And that tiny slice is the Skywalker saga. Right. Not everything in the Star Wars galaxy that was happening has to do with the Skywalker saga. There is a whole thing,
all
right, in Star Wars, in the Star Wars novels, which have been decanonized, all right, by Disney after they acquired Lucasfilms, where it really did expand the Star Wars universe. All right. Have you heard of Grand Admiral Thrawn?
No.
So remember when we were introduced to Ahsoka Tano, the live action Ahsoka Tano in The Mandalorian?
Yes.
All right. She ends her battle with that Imperial officer with, where is Grand Admiral Thrawn?
Who asked that? Ahsoka?
Ahsoka.
Oh. Okay. Wait, is this like a rival of hers or a friend?
Grand Admiral Thrawn is a Grand Admiral of the Empire.
Okay, so.
All right. There's a whole fucking story arc there. This guy was introduced in the first Star Wars novels written by Timothy Zahn.
Uh-huh.
All right. This trilogy takes place 5 years after Return of the Jedi, and it introduced the world to Star Wars fans, really, to Grand Admiral Thrawn. All right. Who was sent out by the Emperor to the Outer Rim, to the fringes of the Empire's borders, all right?
Yeah.
The Galactic Empire and the Galactic Republic that preceded it, all right, do not actually control the whole galaxy of Star Wars, all right? There's a big chunk of the galaxy that they control and administer, but it's not all of it,
right?
There's a whole other thing on the other side of the galaxy, mm-hmm. all right, that people are completely unfamiliar with. And this character of Grand Admiral Thrawn basically comes from there. He has his own agenda, all right, which is where it's implied in the novels that he's kind of found his found his way into the Empire on purpose, moved his way up into the ranks for a whole different agenda, to deal with the threat that is not in the part of the galaxy that we are familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Mm-hmm. And even though these novels were decanonized, Grand Admiral Thrawn was reintroduced into Star Wars canon in Star Wars Rebels.
Oh. All right.
Which is where we interact a lot more with Ahsoka after the end of Clone Wars.
Uh-huh, all right. Uh-huh.
And Ahsoka Tano is also a very interesting character where she is somebody who actually left the Jedi Order. Mm-hmm. All right. Didn't turn to the dark side or anything, is still a Force user, but is not actually a Jedi.
Yeah. All right?
So when she refused to train Grogu mm-hmm. in The Mandalorian, I suspect that it's not because of the reasons that she stated. It's because mm-hmm. she does not consider herself a Jedi anymore.
See, right. That's interesting because, I mean, another thing about Star Wars, which I think I got tired of, is like how black and white a lot of the storylines are. Like, oh, if he's not a Jedi, then he's part of the dark side. And it's like, okay, but like, there's got to be some gray in between, right? And I love stories that explore the gray.
There's actually a lot in the cartoons that explores the gray.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's so much in there.
I know. There's just and too many seasons of mine. I can't watch
it's
it
It's wonderful and it's beautiful and it's awesome. And even with the whole, you know how stormtroopers just get shot immediately, right? And die immediately. There's even this really hilarious line in Star Wars Rebels where there's this old clone trooper who goes, yeah, clone armor is way better than stormtrooper armor. Stormtrooper armor is crap. They really like just let it all go to the shitter.
Yeah, like what is it? Like recycled waste that they make out of there? Unbelievable.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Maybe one day I'll watch them.
But yeah, I think the ultimate story of Star Wars, which Obi-Wan Kenobi, the show, gets into, it's about the balance of the universe and balance in the Force.
Yeah, which very much applies to real life. And although this week, maybe I am feeling a lot of despair and hopelessness, I do want whoever listens to this podcast to, you know, just keep fighting the good fight.
Yeah. You got to keep fighting the good fight because it's always going to be a seesaw. There's this line at the end of Watchmen. Mm-hmm. The graphic novel and the movie where Ozymandias says to Dr. Manhattan, did I get it right in the end? Or something something along those lines. Did I get it right in the end? Did I do the right thing in the end? And Dr. Manhattan goes, nothing ever ends.
Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing, you know, for those of you fighting the good fight, like, it is an internal struggle. Even if you give up fighting, the fight is still going to happen.
Yeah.
If you think you've won, all right, the fight is still going to happen. There are a lot of people out there who are celebrating the ruling in Roe v. Wade. Mm-hmm. All right. Great. You got your victory. Okay.
Yeah.
But nothing ever ends.
Yeah. Agreed. And to end with another quote, but from Lord of the Rings, when Samwise says to Frodo, there's some good in this world, Mr. Frodo, and it's worth fighting for. So gonna leave that hopeful quote. And on that note, thank you as always for listening to Grounded Geeks.
And we'll catch you next week. Who knows what we'll get into next week?
Yeah, who knows what rights will be stripped away then? Just kidding. Okay, bye everyone.
Bye-bye.